cold and endless falling, hurtling at unimaginable speeds, faster and faster, into a void beyond comprehension. A meteor raced by, twisted faces trapped in its fiery tail. The faces looked deep into his eyes, and he couldn't turn away. Shame filled his tormented soul as more faces were presented in a hellish pageant, a litany of crimes. Some wept for clemency, others raged in bestial fury, while a few simply stared with the utter emptiness of acceptance. Fire engulfed him, and he entered the faces, shattering the skull bones and plunging into the morass of living brain tissue like a surgeon's scalpel. Now he was swimming in blood, rising bubbles filled with nightmarish scenes. Animals stood before him on display and opened their own chests to spill their beating organs on steel tables under harsh lights. And none of them had hearts, only clocks, bloody clocks ticking softly inside their dying bodies. He ordered them to go away, then pleaded with hot tears flowing down his cheeks to no avail. The animals died in droves, only to be replaced with men in chains, their knowing eyes damning him for the monster he was. Wailing, he clawed at his face to stop the visions, fingernails gouging into his eyes. But his hands were ghostly things, phantasms of ethereal flesh, and there was nothing he could do to stop or even slow the grotesque litany. The clothing of the men melted away, their hairy bodies becoming the supple flesh of beautiful women. Long, flowing hair, full breasts, only the best. An endless parade of naked women, whipped and humbled, chained supine on the terrible table as the silver knives removed their skin and flesh. Eyes staring, clocks for hearts. Impossible beings roughly laughed behind him and placed cold hands on his own bare flesh. Revulsion filled him like acid, and he tried to vomit, but could only convulse, muscles writhing, limbs flailing. Then a special face filled his vision, expanding to fill the ocean of blood until the mouth was a door that opened on a dead man, hanging by his own belt in a filthy underground cell. "Not my fault," the silent words echoed in his head as the beating of his heart changed into the ticking of a clock, the noise building into a deafening crescendo until shattering the universe into a million shards of tinkling glass that fell away in a molten rain. There, a flash of light, and he was falling through a blue sky with white clouds. Mountains appeared, oceans, forests. A hurricane wind buffeted his form with savage fury as the world expanded, rushing ever closer. Suddenly, his lungs filled with air, and at last he could scream, a raw wail of anguish and absolute terror that lasted forever. Painfully standing, Silas found himself in a field of green grass under a blue sky, dotted with white clouds overhead. But those colors were wrong. The sky was purple, slashed with orange fire, wasn't it? A low rock wall cut across a field, and a copse of trees stood guard to the west, stout protection against the coming storm. The nuke storm, Skydark, doomsday. Not his fault. A town of old buildings was in the distance, a church tower bell ringing the time, as a beautiful woman in a flowing dress floated toward him, her hair flowing in the wind. She was carrying a bouquet of flowers that withered, died, and blossomed again in an endless cycle of death and rebirth. Not his fault.
"Why, there you are. But I should introduce myself. My name is Tanner, Emily Tanner."
Snarling in glee, Silas reached behind his back and drew a small automatic.
"Excellent."
Jacking the slide and leveling the weapon at her face, he pulled the trigger. The gun violently exploded, a fireball engulfing his hand as the weapon detonated, blowing off his own fingers. Emily neither flinched nor frowned as Silas screamed from the pain, staring at the white bones protruding from the ruin of his arm, warm red blood pumping out of the shattered limb.
"My husband is Dr. Theophilus Tanner. Do you know my husband, by any chance?"
"Not my fault!
Silas dropped to his knees and tried to staunch the flow of blood from the arm with his free hand. But the flesh was too slippery, and he couldn't get a grip on the tattered rags of meat. In the distance, a steam locomotive puffed along iron rails, gliding past the black doors of a redoubt. And nearby, a child raced across the field, guiding a kite in the sky, the cloth tail dancing merrily. A small dog yipped and barked alongside the child, and Silas vaguely recognized the boy as himself. How could that be? Then a dark shape stepped between them, blotting out the golden sun.
Hello, fool.
Duck slowly drew a blade from the ebony shaft of his walking stick. The needle's sharp tip glistened in the bright sunlight, and it flashed forward. Silas could only gasp as the steel slashed across his face, opening the flesh to the bone, his cheek peeling away, and rivers of blood gushing forth. He tried to beg for mercy, but no words would come, and the blade slashed across his throat, filling his lungs with choking blood. Emily laughed gaily and threw flower petals as Doc began to dissect the scientist, his heart falling onto the ground, the gears and pendulums still connected by the major arteries, beating away to force the blood from his countless wounds. Suddenly, the sky turned an impossible shade of dark purple, and sheet lightning thundered as Doc peeled off more skin from Silas's naked form, his beating organs splayed on the grass like offerings to some pagan god. The pain was beyond imagination, and the blood was everywhere, now inches deep across the entire field. Then, Doc dropped the sword and drew a huge pistol. Silas begged for death, for release from the incredible agony. But Doc pointed the weapon away from Silas and fired, the muzzle flash igniting the blood into a lake of flame. Tongues of fire filled his mouth and the open cavity of his chest. It crawled up his rectum and inside his belly until it bulged. The bugs swarmed over him, through the crackling flames, endless, eating his flesh. And Silas drew in a lung full of fire and insects as he was consumed alive. Bolting upright in bed, Silas Jamevu screamed at the darkness, his hands clawing at empty air. With a bang, the door to his bedroom slammed open, and armed Sekhmen wearing clean blue shirts rushed in, the muzzles of their AK-47 blasters searching for intruders.
What is it, sir? Are you hurt? Were you attacked?
Silas tried to speak, but his throat was too dry and sore to do much more than squeak.
Nobody in the closet, and the window's locked tight.
The Sekhmen jiggled the steel lattice that covered the huge window overlooking the great project. The tiny dots of torches moved in the blackness on the distant ground, the cool fire of orange moonlight bathing the huge satellite dish that dominated the ville by its sheer size.
Out of the way, fools!
The major brushed through the Sekhmen. Going to a humming refrigerator, the officer grabbed a frosty bottle of mineral water and crossed the room to thrust it into the elderly man's hands. Silas greedily drank the icy water, savoring every drop as the horrible delusions of his nightly dream faded.
Thank you, Sheffield.
Silas placed the empty bottle on his sweaty blankets. Major William Sheffield merely nodded and returned to the refrigerator for another bottle. The airtight cap was loose. These bottles refilled from a nearby stream, but it was still mineral water. Only weeks ago, the stream had been polluted with acid rain and toxchems to the point it was gelatinous. Now the stream flowed pure and clean again, thanks to the great project.
Same dream, sir.
Sheffield gently guided the bottle to the man's pale lips. Silas nodded as he drank again, strength and sanity returning with every beat of his heart. A tremor shook his body, and the old wound in his thigh ached deeply.
The same. It has been the same nightmare every night since I tried to force a cron jump. Was I insane? The jump haunts me, chases me through my dreams every night. No escape. There is no escape. How did Tanner survive a cron jump sane? What makes him so special? Was it the redoubt itself? Did the computers malfunction?
Sheffield gestured.
Everybody out! Stat!
Stiffly saluting, the guard shuffled into the corridor and closed the door.
I don't think it's wise to be discussing such things in front of the troops, sir.
The major drew a chair closer. He took the seat and glanced about.
The fewer people who know the existence of the redoubts, the better.
Yes. You are quite correct.